meeting. We have a couple of action items.
Peter Beck?
Thanks.
Sit down back to Paul.
I know you did a good job.
Remarkable young people. We need to get them attached to the student business accelerator. Two of them are starting businesses. So. First action item today is the transfer of 2341 Hadley Coron Road. The property is largely wooded, and it's located right here. You can tell the property line runs right through here, over around, down this cut, down through here, down and around, and then up past this house and around. The property was originally donated by Miss Sally Carwell in 2002 to use as a teaching and research center for the WKU biology department. The tract is 43.54 acres of land. It's located about 13.3 miles from WKU's main campus. It's located just on, included this map here. This is Butler County. This is Morgantown Road. And the interstate is right there, or the 165 is right there. So that's the location of the property. There's two tracts of property. WKU owns the larger tract, the 43.53 acres of mostly wooded property. And then there's an additional home that was donated to the WKU Real Estate Corporation back in 2012. And the WKU Real Estate Corporation, because it was a home, maintained that property because of the liability associated with that. The university's largely moved to our Green River Preserve. Presently, we have about 1,800 acres located at the Green River Preserve, and student applied research is pretty active over there presently. And so it is because of that shift in programs, we're not utilization of the 43.53 acres is not what it once was at this part of Warren County. The WKU Real Estate Corporation has no long-term endowment. The property, the house, is becoming having more maintenance-related issues, and there's no endowment to take care of the house. So the WKU Real Estate Corporation has some challenges with maintaining that house at that location. After discussing various options, and Donald J.P. can add a little bit about this donor. But it was agreed that the best course of action is to sell the property. WKU Corporation's, once this property is transferred to the WKU Corporation, WKU Corporation will sell both tracts, the house tract and this 43-acre property. And they'll, the monies and proceeds from that will be used to establish a scholarship fund for graduate students in the biology department. And the College Heights Foundation will be responsible for administering these scholarships. And Donald, you might want to talk a little bit about the engagement that you've had with this.
Yeah, I'd be happy to, Brad. Miss Sally Carwell, a very generous donor to the university, and as you mentioned, in 2002, gave the initial land to be able to use for the biology department. In 2012, she came back and donated her home, which is where she lived, and wanted to create the Potter Nicely Outdoor Education Center. And as Brad mentioned, it's just been a challenge over the years. Biology graduate students have lived out there, but the house has continued to deteriorate with no long-term endowment. So Bruce Schulte and I met with Sally Carwell, talked through the options, and she was agreeable. Her main goal is to help biology students, so she's still going to be able to do that through the scholarship fund. And Bruce articulated to her how much we're using with the Green River Preserve now, 1,800 acres instead of 40 acres. There's not a lot they can do on this 40 acres that they can't do at the other property. So it just makes sense for the long term to go ahead and sell this property and create the scholarship fund to honor the Potter and Nicely legacies, which is what she wants to do.
The action item is authorization for WKU to transfer 43.53 acres of property from WKU to the WKU Real Estate Corporation to sell the property and create a scholarship fund for the biology department graduate students.
Do we have a current estimate of what their property is going to be worth?
The original appraisal when she gave the land was $65,000. The home in 2012 with the remaining 5 acres was $135,000. So together, $200,000 is what it's been appraised for. We'll auction it off in the coming months after this is approved, and we're going to go to the highest bidder, but $200,000 is what we've got in mind.
And I think reasonably $3,000 per acre for that price of property, you know, plus a house, so, you know, it could go a little bit higher. We hope it would go higher.
Are you anticipating setting the reserve?
We've talked to her about that. She would like us to. We're working with a real estate corporation right now. Probably not going to set it at 200. If we do, we might come off of that 20%. But the home, again, it's getting in a pretty bad shape. So the land is going to be more valuable than what the home is.
I don't want to get into your lane of travel, but have you looked at the timber, value of the timber on the property?
Mr. Chair, I'll make that motion. So moved. Okay, I have a motion to approve the authorization of transfer property as described. I hear a second.
I second.
Good. First and a second. Any further discussion? None. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Motion passes. We have one other piece of property to talk about.
Next item to discuss is the transfer of 521 Emmett Drive from the WKU Real Estate Corporation to WKU. This property is located, this is our South Campus. This is 31W. Not sure that name on that, but that's 31W. This is Campbell Lane, and this is Emmett Drive. This is our South Campus Intermural Fields Parking Transportation Facility, our South Campus building, and then our parking lot's located toward the Emmett Drive side of our South Campus. And the property in question is this house that is located right there, and you can see this 0.58-acre piece of property right here along Emmett Drive. This is a little closer view of the house before the road was put in and established. This house is... There's only three houses located facing Emmett Drive here, that location. And the advantage of this particular piece of property is it squares our property off very nicely in this region of the city of Bowling Green. This was the proposed drawing for the road, and as some of you are aware, the road has been constructed on this leased property. And the property was purchased by the WKU Real Estate Corporation in August 2016 for $155,000. It was originally intended to be held in reserve in case the university needed it, and the university was going to, or the real estate corporation, going to cash flow the property, and lease the property out, and just cash flow it until at such time the university would need the property. We identified these three parcels of property back in 2015 as possible acquisition targets. And this particular one was the most advantageous for acquisition and purchase. It was 0.53 acres, and after the acquisition occurred by the Real Estate Corporation, it was determined that we had some cost savings associated with the building of the road in that location. Because the quick relative return on investment of 3 to 5 years, we determined that it made sense to move forward with that project. The Parking and Transportation Department is retiring the lease early, and at this time the property will be free and clear to be transferred to the university's real estate portfolio holdings. And there's more detail in the agenda item here. You might have any questions on that.
Questions? Would you please talk for a second about what that road actually accomplishes? I mean, I know there's a cost savings and speed, but we'll talk about what that means.
Yeah, there's multiple things that take place that were advantageous for us to construct this road. There is a light located at Story Avenue.
Okay. when I came in for the scholarship celebration, that's the road. I thought, oh, this is great. And all of a sudden, I saw it out of the parking lot, and I thought, this is great. Yes. That I like. And it just worked out really well. That's the route I took out of the building, or out of the property.
We use this, students still use this as the lower cost option for parking South Campus, and we like that because it moves cars off campus versus the congestion on campus. They park in here. We operate shuttle operations. The problem with our shuttle buses is we had to stop at the Story Avenue light, and then we had to go down to Emmett Drive and stop at that light for a left-hand turn or a right-hand turn, depending on how we were moving the buses. The problem is these two lights added about 2 minutes per round trip to the connection between Main Campus and South Campus. So we were able to remove the travel time for both of those. All of our buses, 5 days a week, 6 days on Saturdays, and that reduced a considerable amount of fuel. We were able to pull two drivers offline, which was about, we estimate our savings last year was about $108,000, or will be. So certainly a very strategic, financial move for us. Second, there's a lot of accidents in this area. The lights are too close. There's a lot of public traffic issues in this area. And so we've reduced congestion on Nashville Road for the benefit of the community. At the same time, it provides greater safety for our drivers and for our students riding the buses. At the same time, we were building the PS3. And so this allows a better connection, sort of a back connection, to our current existing parking and transportation operations in that PS3 area, so it allows additional support to move our buses back and forth down Emmett and on to campus through those connections. So significant advantages. Long term, obviously, it helps support South Campus and any operations that we have over there.
Very good. Any questions? Comment? If not, I'll entertain a motion. Motion by Regent Henson.
Second.
Second by Regent Johnson. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye. Opposed? Like sign. Motion passes.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Greg.
Prior to his departure, Regent McKinney showed me a text he got from our student regent, who apparently is on his way to the emergency room. Has been up all night with the collie wobbles. GI bug. And therefore was unable to make it this morning. We have a few information items. One being appointment of a nominating committee for officers next year. Four regents have agreed to be on that committee, and George Nichols has agreed to be chairman, which I'm thankful for. David Porter has agreed to be on it. Linda Ball will be on it, and David Franklin. And Regent Brinkley, if you have an update or anything you want to talk about,
absolutely. Thank you, sir. Very quickly, the intent of this was to do a respectful refresh of the bylaws. We are continuing work that has already begun. I have had one-on-one conversations with several members of the committee and others outside of the committee. I've had some questions for the president that he has answered on multiple occasions. As George and I have struggled to have our one-on-one conversations, which I intended to accelerate a couple of weeks ago, we had other challenges come to the table that took time away. So I hope in the May meeting I have a more thorough update and we'll shoot for, if I can get the notifications out to everyone and get some language clarified, a first reading at the May meeting, if that's possible. If not, we'll certainly try to do it in the special meeting in June. That is my update. Thank you.
I want to make a comment about last night. Many of you were there. This was an event that was planned many months ago, a social gathering with members of the Faculty Senate, the Staff Council, and the Student Government, and I think we had a nice turnout last night. I was thinking as I was lying in bed last night who all I was able to talk to and met people I'd never met before, and all conversations I thought were very good and worthwhile. Met with one of the sociologists, I met with a couple of communication people, I met with several staff people, had a nice conversation with one of our biology folks that's applying for a big national grant on the study of bats. I don't know if it was the white nose business or not, but someone from the business department. And then maybe my favorite conversation was with our English professor, who is our main poet within the department, which was fun. And he's heading up the conference on the Jim and Mary Ellen Miller Poetry Gathering that they have every year. But I trust and hope that others had similar conversations. And I thought it was a good evening and something hopefully we can build on and build and foster greater relationships between all those groups. I've asked the president, and some of this may be a little redundant, but recently I've been in a couple of audiences where I've heard him give the long view of what's going on and really synopsizes much of the efforts of the last year and a half, where not just the CAPE process is coming to fruition, but we've had the strategic plan and then the RAMP process. All of us have been involved in varying degrees with all of that. And our president is able to articulate that, I think, in a really wonderful fashion. I've seen do it in front of some of the foundation people and a meeting last week in front of the business advisory group. And I enjoy hearing it every time, and I thought this audience today maybe ought to. So, Mr. President, if you could give your
condensed version.
Yeah, condensed version.
Regent Bell, thank you. And it's easy to get lost in the details frequently and lose sight of the long game. And as a campus, we've undergone a tremendous amount of change. And higher education as an industry is not built for speedy change. As a matter of fact, the opposite. It's a very conservative enterprise. And I don't mean it's not politically conservative or necessarily, but it means decisions take time and they're measured. And sometimes they're measured, and they continue to be measured, and we do that over and over again. And the challenge for universities in the environment in which we're operating is that if we don't act more quickly than we have previously, there are dangers on the horizon. When you think about the age cohort that came out during, that was created, born during the Great Recession of 2007-2008, the age cohort declined by about 10%. After the recession, there was not a recovery of that age cohort. So now we're talking about young people who are getting ready to go to college. The numbers fall off a cliff in 2025-2026 to the tune of 10-15% fewer 18-year-olds. Now, I don't mean to be a doomsayer, because I think there are opportunities with more people going to college, non-traditional students, but we have to be willing as an institution to position ourselves. There's advantage to going first, there's advantage to rethinking what we do, and there's an advantage to positioning ourselves in the marketplace to be successful when the competition will be brutal. We know that's coming in the next 5 years. Higher education also tends to be very good at pattern maintenance. We do this year what we did last year, and we'll do next year what we do this year, because that's just what we do. But I am exceedingly proud of the work that this institution has gone through in the past 2 years. If you think about a strategic plan that everyone thought I would bring in my back pocket that was not my plan, but that we took 9 months as a community with hundreds of faculty, staff, students engaging to create the plan, to have it bubble up, to actually articulate where we're headed as a student-centered applied research university, and focusing on three areas: our Hill, our students, and our community and beyond. We've got a roadmap for the next decade. You couple that with a decentralized budget process that allows us to be more nimble with our financial resources, to reward and incentivize certain behaviors focused on growth, enrollment, persistence and retention, and graduation, in addition to aligning our internal budget model with the state's performance funding model. You add to that a shifting of the perception of programs, meaning programs are not just looked at university-wide. We're thinking about program offerings across a college. Deans, with being empowered to manage their budgets, with a direction articulated by a strategic plan, and a process, an innovation process that began this year with Kate, but will continue into the future, all of a sudden, academic innovation at the college level is where we must be successful for the growth strategy. We've had 2 years of becoming more efficient, thinking about how we restructure, thinking about changes, and now comes the fun part. We will, as a campus and as a community, think about scarce resources and how we reinvest them to grow and to innovate. And we're going to do it in such a way that more students are interested in the experience that we have, not just the degrees, but the total experience. We're now growing more Kentuckians, and so all of our efforts on not just recruitment of freshmen, but recruitment of future graduates will help ensure that first-year students become second-year students, become WKU graduates in 4 years. A changing of the financial aid strategy, not only to attract remarkable honors students, but thinking about how do we make sure needy students from across our 27-county service area are able to afford the experience no matter what, and then moving to a net tuition revenue perspective, where all of a sudden everyone across the campus, but especially deans, academic level leadership, are thinking about the relationship between program offerings, need, net tuition, and outcomes, all of which is aligned to the state's performance funding metrics. We've got tremendous alignment now. We have new leadership joining the campus, and I think the next several years are going to be incredibly fun to watch, and more importantly, to be part of. Deans on this campus have seen their role sometimes as defending their faculty, as fighting the good fight, and obviously as a community, we're going to continue to engage in dialogue and discussion and think about what we want to become and how we get there. But deans, all of a sudden, now have an academic portfolio for which they're responsible, a budget that they have to manage through, and a set of programs, and I hate to use business terminology, but products they're responsible for. And so the work that we've done over the past nine months, if you think about a business that generates from 26% of its product line, 3% of its revenue, I'll show you a business that's not going to be around for very long. And so being intentional about what are we building, what are we creating, and how does it not just connect to what students and what faculty are interested in doing, but also what the marketplace demands. And so I am thankful for the efforts of the entire community for the past 2 years of work. It has been energizing. It has been tiring. It's been excruciating at some points. But I think, and I know, our best days are ahead of us as an institution. So this is not done in the disaggregate. It actually is a strategy that all fits together. And the CAPE process is really the last piece of the campus-wide work. Now we begin to execute against the strategic plan and engage in what I like to call relentless incrementalism.
every day doing a little bit more to get a little bit better and to move the rock. And hopefully it's not a Sisyphean task where the rock comes back on us, but we continue to move it up the hill. So thank you, Regent Bale, for 3 minutes of praises of what we've been working on.
Well, I enjoy hearing it, and I'm sure everybody else does too. I can't hear it too much, and certainly the message is of great optimism, and we can all be hopefully take great satisfaction in the work that has gone on to get us to this point. I love your incrementalism.
Relentless incrementalism.
I heard a comment at the business meeting last week too, liberating structures. Kathy has left. I wanted to ask her after the meeting. I didn't get a chance to exactly what that means, but they're talking about that at the business school, liberating structures. So,
great.
It's good stuff.
Okay. All right. Mr. Chair, I move that the executive committee and fellow members of the board go into a closed session as provided in KRS 61.810 subpart 1 for discussion of proposed or pending litigation against or on behalf of the university.
Second. Have a motion and a second to go into executive session. Any discussion?
So you mentioned about the
The executive committee is now returned to open session. The discussions and deliberations during the closed session were restricted to those stated in the motion, and no formal action was taken in closed session. Any
Mr.
other
Chairman,
business?
I'd like to move to adjourn as much as we've concluded our agenda.
Motion to adjourn.
I second.
Second. Any further discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those like sign. Stand adjourned.